All right, so we left off bottom of Chavches Amud Beis. So if you remember, again, we had the Machlokis in the Mishnah about a Psilas HaBeget Shekifla. So we're dealing now with a piece of a garment that was folded over and made into a wick, but was not yet charred. So we said the Machlokis in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer says that it's Timea, and you can't light with it. Rabbi Akiva said it's Tahora, and you can light with it. So the Gemara said yesterday, we understand, again, in terms of Tumah, what their machlokas is, because their fundamental shayla is, does the bending over of the fabric go ahead and negate the identity of the beged or not? That's the machlokas in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Tumea means it's still a beged, and therefore its identity is not negated. And Rabbi Akiva holds that, no, it's no longer a beged. Once it's folded over, then halacha lemaisa, it loses its identity as a baguette, and therefore one's permitted to go, and therefore it's Tahora. So Rabosa said, the Gemara said, we left off, Ela le'inyan hadlaka. That's actually a little bit up. It's a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 lines up from the bottom. Ela le'inyan hadlaka b'may pligi. So the Gemara says, but what exactly is there machlokis regarding candle lighting? So we understand in terms of Tumah, but why is it that Rabbi Eliezer holds that you can't light with it, and Rabbi Akiva holds you can't light with it? Amar Rabbi Loz, Amar Rabbi Moshe v'chin, Amar Rabbi Adabar Abba, Hacha b'gimel al gimel mitzun tzamos askinon, u'biyom tov shechalios erev Shabbos askinon. So Rabbosai, what happens over here is Rabosha ben Ravada, Ravada bar Ava says, he sets up the case in a very specific way. First of all, the psilas habeged, the piece of beged that we're talking about, is exactly 3x3. It's exactly 3x3. That's number one. And number two, we're dafka dealing with the case of Yom Tov, Shechalios Erev Shabbos. Now you'll see why both of those factors are important in just a moment. Udechuli Alma, and everybody agrees, Udechuli Alma Islahu to Rabbi Yehuda. And everyone agrees with the position of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, the Amar, Masikin Bekelim, Ve'in Masikin Beshivrei Kelim. Rabbi Yehuda holds that on Yom Tov, you are permitted to fuel a fire with utensils, right, whole utensils, but you're not permitted to fuel a fire with broken utensils. What does that mean? That if you have a kli that breaks on Yom Tov, you are not permitted to use the shards for fire. Why? Because it's considered to be nolad. Considered to be nolad. Because remember, nolad is a category of mukta that says that if something either did not yet exist, or changed form over the course of Yom Tov, that you are not permitted to go ahead and you're not permitted to halacha lemaisa go ahead and use it on Yom Tov. With the kuli alma islahu de ula, and everyone also agrees with the position of ula. The amar ula says hamadlik tzarech sheyadlik berov hayotze. Ula also says that halacha lemaisa, when you go ahead and you light a wick, you have to light with the majority of the wick. You have to light the majority of it that extends out of the oil. Now that we have those two things in place, the Gemara says like this, Rabbi Eliezer Savar Kipol Eino Moil. Rabbi Eliezer says the following. He holds that when you bend over the piece of fabric, it does not do anything. The Chavon Da'adlik Bei Purta, now what does that mean, it does not do anything? That it still has the status of a beged. Still has the status of a beged. And what happens? The chayvan da alik peporta, when you light part of that fabric, havile shevrikli. Now, I will say, remember, we're dafka talking about what? A shlosha, a piece of fabric that's 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, which is the basic dimensions. Forget about shlosha that we learned a couple of days ago. Shlosha is the basic dimensions for a keli, right? For a beged. So what happens? As soon as now you begin to singe it, what happens? You have just deconstructed the beged. You've just deconstructed the kli. Havile shever kli. It turns out to be that it's shever kelim. Vichi kamadlik, beshever kli kamadlik. And when you go ahead and therefore light this particular piece of baguette, you actually end up lighting it with shever kelim. And that's osur. Rabbi Akiva holds, kipo moil. No, when you bend over the piece of fabric, that's mutter. Ve'in toras kli alov. Not that it's mutter, excuse me. When you bend over the piece of fabric, it loses its identity as a baguette. And therefore, ve'in toras kli alov. And when you end up lighting, you're simply lighting with a piece, literally with a piece of wood. So Rabbi Yosef, I always wondered about this, because when it came to this Mishnah, there was a braisa that served kind of as a footnote that said that the Mishnah is dealing with the case of exactly a piece of fabric 3x3. And Rabbi Yosef said, I never knew what the braisa was talking about. But now Rabbi Yosef says, now I understand it. So Rabbi Yosef, It turns out that, at least according to the approach of Rav and the Barava, the Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva has to do is, first of all, talking about dafka, a piece of fabric that's 3x3, Yom Tov that fell on Erev Shabbos. We pass in like Rabbi Yehuda that you can't light with Shivrei Kelim. And the Machlokas is the following. Really, it ties back to the Tumah case. According to Rabbi Eliezer, when you bend over the piece of fabric, it's still called the Kli. When you light it, the first moment that you singe it, you take away from its 3x3 dimensions, that's called Shivrei Kelim. You can't light on Yom Tov with Shivrei Kelim. According to Rabbi Akiva, it's once you bend it over or once you fold it over, it's no longer a baguette, therefore there's no Shivrei Kelim, and therefore it's permitted to light with it. So the Gemara says, finally, my Hilchasa. So the Gemara says, "Umid the commentaries of Adabar Ava Alibud Rabbi Huda Shma Mina Rabbi Huda Svirale." So we'll say the Gemara says, "Now the factor of Adabar Ava, the factor of Adabar Ava, Paskins like or said that the halacha follows Rabbi Huda, that would seem to say that he himself Paskins like Rabbi Huda." Umi Amar Rav Adabar Ava Hachi, but Rav Adabar Ava actually say this. V'Amar Rav Adabar Ava Tap of Chavtes Nachli Shechakak Kav BeBikas Yisrael. If you have a non-Jew on Yom Tov that carved out a kav. Now, a kav is a measurement, but a kav was also the name given to a particular utensil that held that volume measure. So you have a non-Jew that took the log of a Jew on Yom Tov, and he hollowed out a kli. Rashi points out, the habile nolad. Now, again, something new was created that didn't exist before. So the halacha is, the Raisa says, or Rav Adabar Ava says, masika b'Yom Tov. You're permitted to go ahead and use this as firewood for Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, "Va'amai, no lot who? How could Rav Adabar Ava allow that? It's no lot, right? It's something new that was created. It's muktan Yom Tov." To which the Gemara says, "Lidivreim Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Akiva Kamar lei, but lei lo svir lei." So the Gemara says, "Inachinami." When Rav Adabar Ava suggested that the Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that we're permitted to go ahead and fire or fuel a fire with kelim, but not with shivrei kelim. That was according to the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. But Rav Adabar Ava himself does not hold that way. Rav Adabar Ava himself happens to hold that there's... Well, we'll see exactly what he holds. But for right now, at least, it would appear that he does not have a problem with no lot on Yom Tov. Rava Amar, Hainu Tainu de Rabbi Eliezer, Lefi She'in Madlikin Vepsila She'ina Mechurechas, Velo Bismartutin She'ina Mechurachin. So comes along Rava, and Rava gives a different approach. Rava says, no, the reason why Rabbi Eliezer holds that you may not go ahead and use this wick mentioned in the Mishnah of the folded over piece of fabric is because it's not singed. It's not singed. And similarly, you may not use rags that are not singed. So what's the logic over here? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Time of Rabbi Eliezer, Bahadloka mishum de'in madlikin bo she'in dolkin yofa ubechol shabbosos hashana aser v'lad mishum nolad." So Rava comes along and says, "This has nothing." Rava disagrees with Rav Adabar Ava, and he says, "Rav Adabar Ava, this has nothing to do with Eretz Yom Tov, nothing to do with 3x3, nothing to do with Shivrei Kelim. It's much simpler. The reason you can't use the wick mentioned in the Mishnah is because it was not singed." You're not allowed to use any wick on Shabbos and Yom Tov that has not initially been charred, that has not been singed. Why? Because until it's been singed for the first time, it doesn't necessarily catch fire as quickly or as easily. Therefore, there's a fear that if the flame is going to flicker on Shabbos, you may come to adjust the flame, which could lead to an Isra of Havara. But if that's the case, then what do you do, Rabbi Yosef, with the Braisa that spoke of that Braisa that followed up on our Mishnah and said the Mishnah is dealing with the situation of 3x3 exactly? So the Gemara says, Le'inyon Tuma. It has nothing to do with candle lighting. It has to do with Tuma. Disnan Gimel al Gimel Sha'amru Chutz min Amal al Divi Reb Shimon. The Chachamim Omrim Gimel al Gimel Mechuvanos. So Rabbi Yosef, the Braisa over here is actually not referring to our Mishnah. The Braisa is referring to a separate discussion of Tuma. What's the discussion? So it's a fascinating discussion in terms of when we say, like we've established right in the last couple of days, that in order for a particular piece of fabric to go ahead and become tamei, it will be separate to him, it has to have gimel al gimel, it has to have 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim. So the question becomes, what does that include? So Reb Shimon holds that it's chutz min amalal. Chutz min amalal refers to like the hem on the corners of the baguette. So that's that the body of the baguette itself is 3x3, but the hem is something additional. The chum hold no gimel al gimel mechuvanos. That ultimately the 3x3 dimensions refer to the baguette in its entirety, including the external hem. Amr Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, masikin bekelim, ve'in masikin b'shivrei kelim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Shimon Matir. So also listen to this. So now the Gemara is going to list three different cases in the name of Rav. Case number one is Masikin Mikalim. On Yom Tov, you are permitted to go ahead and fuel a fire with utensils. I guess earthenware utensils, but also wooden utensils. So you could fuel a fire with utensils. Ve'im Masikin B'Shivrei Kelim. But if you have utensils that broke, remember all of this is about utensils that broke on Yom Tov. Because if the utensils broke before Yom Tov, then Aloch Lamai said those shards are certainly usable for fire purposes. The idea is that the identity of a kli is forged at the onset of Shabbos on Yom Tov. So if the kli was whole at the beginning of Yom Tov, then it's not fire worthy, right? That it would not normally be used for fire. And therefore Aloch Lamai said once it breaks, those shards are no lot. Divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon Matir. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says that it's motor. Case number two. Masikin bitmarim. Now I will say, just so you know, remember, we had our previous machlokis in general between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon in regards to mukta, right? In terms of Rabbi Huda taking a more, I mean, we didn't do this sugya yet, but we alluded to it in Arashi. So Rabbi Huda takes the more restrictive view to mukta, where that an item actually has to be set aside for use. Rabbi Shimon takes a more relaxed view for mukta, that as long as the item could technically be used for a permitted purpose, then it's not mukta. Next case. Masikin b'tmarim, you can go ahead and fuel a fire with dates. Achlan, if you ate the dates, ein masikin b'garinehen, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds, if you ate the dates, you may not go ahead and fuel the fire with the pits. Rabbi Shimon matir. Rabbi Shimon says you can. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Masikin b'tmarim, you could fuel a fire with dates. Rashi points out, the agav dimetaltaluhu la'achila, chazunami la'asaka. Once you're permitted to go ahead and carry the dates for eating purposes, meaning once you're permitted to pick up the date, once you're permitted to pick it up to eat it, so halach lemaisa, you're permitted to go ahead and throw it into the fire as well. However, achlan, just look at the next Rashi, achlan b'yom tov, ein masikin begarin in b'yom tov, you can't fuel a fire with the pits on yom tov. Why? Dahavi luhu nolad. Because now Rabbi Huda suggests that halach lemaisa, the pits are nolad. Okay? Rabbi Shimon matir, Rabbi Shimon allows it. Next case. Masikin be'egozim, you're permitted to fuel a fire with egozim. The logic over here is the same. That once you're permitted to go in and pick up these items for the sake of eating them, you're permitted to throw into the fire also. Achlan, but if you eat the nuts, ein masikin beklipo sehen, you may not fuel the fire with their shells. With their shells. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. So the Gemara says, utzrichan. We need all three of these cases, right? So remember, we have three cases now. Shivrei kelim, tmarim, and egozim. And in each of the cases, it's the same. The primary object can be used to fuel a fire, but the secondary use, whether it's the shards, whether it's the pit of the date, or the shells of the nuts, Rabbi Huda says is aser, for it to put into the fire, Rabbi Shimon says is mutter. So much as a trick, you need all of these cases. Because if it would have just said the first case of Shivrei Kelim, Bahi Kam Rabbi Huda Mishum Demei Karakli, Vahashta Shevrei Kli, so I would have understood that if it would have just said the case of Shivrei Kelim, I would have understood that in that case Rabbi Huda says it's Aser. Why? Because now you literally have an object in another form. Right? In the beginning it was a whole kli, now it's a broken kli, and I understand why you call that Nolad. God bless you. I understand why you say that now something new has arrived on the scene. Aval Tmarim, when it comes to dates, the Me'ikara Garinan, the Hashta Garinan, but I would have thought maybe in the case of the pits, maybe the pits should be mutter. Why? Nothing new happened. It was a pit. It is a pit. It's always going to be a pit. Nothing's changed. The only thing that's really happened is you've uncovered the pit. Kamash Malon, even in that case, Rabbi Huda says it's Aser. Right? Rabbi Huda says Aser. Why? Because again, now essentially the pit is something new that came into the world. Beforehand, it wasn't here from a halachic perspective because it was encased by the pri. Now it's here, therefore it's nolad also. And therefore we need both cases. V'yashmo inon garinin, if would have just told me the case of the date pit, hava amina de me'ikara mechasyon v'hashta megalyon. I might have thought the reason why the case of the date pit is Aser is why, at least according to Rabbi Huda, because before it was covered, and now it's suddenly been revealed. Rashi says, Hilchach, no la tava. So I understand why that's called no la. Ava klipe egoz in the meikara miglu, the ashta miglu, when it comes to the shells of the nuts, which again were revealed, were there, were obvious from the beginning. Ema shapir dami. I might have thought that even in that case, Rabbi Huda would permit its use for fire, therefore it's tzricha. Sefer the Gemara says, halacha lemaisa, since you really could not have learned out one case from the other, therefore halacha lemaisa, the Mishnah Gemara quotes all three cases. V'ha dirav, lav beferish itmar, Ela Michlala Itmar. So I will say, the Gemara says that Rav's position was not stated explicitly, but rather was inferred from a particular Maisa. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Vahadirav, the Amar the Rabbi Huda, Ein Masikin, the Amar the Rabbi Huda, Ein Masikin Begarinin, La Beferish Itmar. This idea that Rav stated that according to Rabbi Huda, you would not be permitted to go ahead and fuel a fire with the pits of dates, was not stated by Rav explicitly, but rather it was seen from a Maisa. So what's the Maisa? Dirav Achli Tamri, Rav went ahead and ate dates, Vishadi Vishada Kashyasa Lebuchya, and he threw, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, Achli Ta'achal Tamri Bichol. This was an episode that happened during the week. So Rav was eating dates during the week, and he threw Kashyasa, Rashi says, is Garinon. He threw the pit, Lebuchya, Rashi says, Kir Sharaki. He threw the date into the fire, into a stove. Okay. Amrali Rav Chia said to Rav, Bar Pachsi, son of nobleman, right, which is a respectful way of talking to Talmud Chacham, Kinegdo B'yom Tov Aser. So Rav Chia said to him, Rav, I just want to tell you that what you just did, had it been on Yom Tov, would have been Aser, right? So again, Rav ate the date, took the pit, threw it into the fire. Rav Chia tells him, what you just did on Yom Tov would have been Aser. So the Gemara says, well, one second, if we stop over here for just a moment, so the Gemara is saying that as a result of this exchange, we now glean from the fact that Rav's position is like Rabbi Yehuda, or Rav mentioned the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that in fact throwing date pits into a fire is asur on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, one second, kibla mine, olo kibla mine. Just because Rav Chia said it to Rav, doesn't mean what? Doesn't mean that Rav accepted it. Right, so how do we know that Rav in fact accepted that statement of Rav Chia as halacha l'maisa? Tashma dechi asa Rav lebavel, when Rav went to Bavel, achol tamre, he ate dates, v'shadya kashyasa l'chiyusa. So in fact the Gemara says that we have another story that what happened, Rav went to Bavel, and this time he was eating dates on Shabbos. On Yom Tov. He was eating dates on Yom Tov. And what did he do with the pits? Vishada kashyasa lichiyusa. He threw the pits to the animals. So the Gemara says, my love, the parsiyasa, below kibla, are we not dealing with Persian dates? And therefore it's clear that Rav did not accept the statement of Rav Chia. Now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Parsiyasa, Rashi says, Tamarim Tovim. Apparently Persian dates are good quality dates. And Tamarim Tovim, umisbashlim yafa. And they ripen very well. The chol ochal shalahem nifrash mi al garinehen. The ein hagarinen ruuyin letaltel. So interestingly enough, so the way it works with Persian dates is because they're so ripe, when you eat the date, there's no fruit left on the pit. So the pit itself is clean. Therefore, says Rashi, the ein hagarinen ruuyin letaltel. Therefore, the garin and the pits themselves become muktza. Va'afilu hachi shari letaltel nemishdin lechayusa. So suppose I listen to this story. So Rav is eating a date in Bavel on Yom Tov. He finishes the date, takes the date pit, and throws it to the animals. Now technically speaks, and the Gemara says, are we not talking about Persian dates? Which means that essentially this pit should have become mukta. But yeah, what did Rav do? Rav went ahead and threw it to the animals, which means that he was metaltal it. He took it, he threw it over to the animals. Which would indicate then what? That Rav did not accept the statement of Rav Chia earlier on. Because earlier on, when Rav was eating a date during the week, so Rav Chia's, and then Rav threw the pit into the fire, Rav Chia essentially said to him, the pit is mukta. So we see from this episode that Rav did not accept the statement of Rav Chia. So the Gemara says, lo, ba'ar miyasa. Rav was not eating a Persian date, he was eating an Aramean date. So what's the Aramean date? Take a look at Rashi. Ba'ar misa, de'ein misvash shalas yafa. Apparently, these Aramean dates are of lesser quality. They don't fully ripen, and therefore, what happens? The in ha'ochal nifrash mehen umishtayer begarinen v'chazul adam. So apparently, with these Aramean dates that do not ripen as well, even when you get to the pit, there's always some of the fruit that's left on the pit. Because of that, the pit itself never actually becomes muktza. Because as long as there's actual fruit on the pit, it's mutter to be metaltal it. So the Gemara says, lo bar musa v'hoil v'chazi agav imayhu. Literally means, and the pit is permitted because of its mother. The mother in this particular case means the pre, and if halacha l'maisa, it's permitted to go ahead and move it. So Rabbosai, the point over here is, we don't see from this episode that Rav rejected the position of Rav Chiya. If anything, we see from the previous episode that he must have accepted the position of Rav Chiya, and that's why Rav at least quotes, according to Rav Yehuda, that halacha l'maisa, all of these cases of nolad will be asran yom tov. Amar li Rav Shmuel bar Chana, Amar li Rav Shmuel bar Chana l'Rav Yosef. The Rav Yehuda, the Amar Masikim Mekelim, the Ein Masikim Meshivrei Kelim, according to Rav Yehuda, who holds that you can fire up a fire with utensils, but not with broken shards, because it's no lod. Kevan the Adlik Behu Parta Havi Le Shivrei Kelim, the Chika Mahafech BeYisura Kamahafech. It's interesting. The Gemara says the following. So take a look at Rashi here. No. So listen to this.
It's a ridiculous question, but when he says fire up with kaolin, do you mean use it to pick up a piece of fuel and put the...
No. It's fuel. It's fuel. It's fuel. It's fuel. It's fuel. Yes. The shuriken being used as fuel. Fuel, excuse me. So the Gemara says the following. Let's read this one to Rav. Amalei Rav Shlomo bar Barachana le Rav Yosef. So now we're going back. So now if you talk about this utensil. Rav Yehuda holds the halacha l'maisa, you're permitted to go ahead and fuel a fire with whole kelim. So the question now, and that would shivrei kelim. So the Gemara says, well, don't you by definition run into a basic problem? Kevan da'adlik behu parta, once you go ahead and essentially ignite one part of the kli, what ends up happening? Havi le shivrei kelim. It turns out that the whole kli becomes a partial kli, v'chi kama hafech, and therefore when you turn over the fire, so to speak, kama hafech, obviously be isur kama hafech, you're ending up stoking the fire with isur. So also, what the Gemara is essentially asking is a fundamental question, which is, doesn't every whole kli essentially become shivrei kelim afterwards? If that's the case, then how can you ever really fuel a fire? So the Gemara says, the Ovid ki Rav Nasna. So because we're passing like Rav Nasna, what did Rav Nasna say? The Amar Rav Nasna Amar Rav, Eitzim shenishru min adekel, letanur biyomtov, marbe eitzim muchanim umasikin. It's actually very interesting. So the Gemara says, Rav Nasna holds the following Rav Osei, that if you have, it's actually quite amazing, if you have eitzim shenishru min adekel, so let's say you're building a fire, the fire is underneath a tree, and some of the branches from the palm tree fall into the fire. Now, technically speaking, you're not allowed to use those branches from the tree because they're nolot, right? They were not accessible to you at the onset of Yom Tov, and therefore, technically speaking, they remain mukta throughout Yom Tov. So what happens if some of them fall into the oven? So Rav Nasna gives a very interesting heter. He says what you could do is you could just simply add in additional wood. You could add an additional wood into the oven, and essentially what? Be mevatel, right? You create a situation of bittel barov. You negate the wood that fell in with the majority of permitted wood, and you're permitted to go ahead and use it. Now, Bosai, normally this is an exception to the rule, because under normal circumstances, the way that bittel works is only after the fact. This is a situation you're permitted to go ahead and do premeditated, intentional bittel. It's for a variety of reasons that you're not going to get into today, but on the most basic level, because halach lamais are talking about a dirabanan. When, right, all these things are only asr midirabanan, the wood is already there, it already fell in, you did not intentionally place it there, and therefore Aloch Lamaisa Chazal permitted bittel in this particular situation. Okay? Fine. Rav Hamuna Amar Hacha, Bepachos Mishlosha Al Shlosha Askinan. So we'll say, now we're going all the way back. So Rav Hamuna said that what's the case over here? We're dealing with a situation of less than Shlosha Al Shlosha. So look at Rashi for just a moment. Pachos mishlosha, Rav Hamnuna Amar, Masnisin bepachos mishlosha tvachim ashlosha tvachim pligi leinyan tuma. So Rav Hamnuna wants to suggest that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the object itself is less than 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim. Rav Hamnuna Amar hacha pachos mishlosha ashlosha askinon umikule matlonios shanu. And what are we talking about over here? Kule matlonios. And I will say, here's what we're going to see. Now that we understand that we're talking about a piece of baguette that is less than 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, mikuli matlonios. Kuli matlonios means, and you're using it for a non-chashuv purpose. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Mikuli matlonios. Matlonios hakalos be'inov. Dumya dimitukonos lefakok merchatz. Dimidi delo chashuvu. The people do not get the masnisin mishum habov dinakat dafka uleplukta da adlokat tanakif. Okay, so we'll say, listen to this. So the Gemara wants to suggest that the psilas habeged that we're talking about in the Mishnah is talking about a situation of a beged that's less than 3x3 tefachim, less than 3x3 tefachim, that has been actively set aside for a non-important use. Just follow me with this. So the Gemara says the following. Va'azda Rabbi Elazar letame, v'Rabbi Akiva letame. And both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva follow their respective reasonings. What are their respective reasonings? Disnan, we learned. Pachos mishlosha al shlosha, sheskinu lefakak bo es hamerchatz. So if you have a piece of fabric that was less than 3x3 tefachim, and now you relegated the use of that fabric for a very unimportant reason. What would be an unimportant task? For example, to plug up the drain in the merchatz, in the bathhouse. Or, lina'er bo'es hakidera, or to go ahead and use a potholder, right? To use as a potholder. Ulikanech bo'es harichayim, or to go ahead and what? To go ahead and clean off the mill. The Rabbosai, the assumption, all of these things is these are all non-chashuv, unimportant activities. The Rabbosai, what's the chab of this? When you go ahead and you take a baguette and you relegate it to an unimportant task, so you negate its identity as a baguette. That's the chab. Now, this only works, of course, in a baguette that's less than 3x3. Because if a baguette is 3x3, it has the dimensions to be chashuv on its own. If it's less than 3x3, it has relative chashivos. The relativity of the chashivos depends on what you're using the baguette for. If you're using the baguette for something important, it has status of a baguette. Unimportant, it's not a baguette. So now the Mishnah is saying over here that if you go ahead and you took this baguette that's less than 3x3 and you use it for a rag, for something totally unimportant, bless you, it loses its identity as a baguette. Now here's what's interesting. Now, after using this baguette for a non-chashiv purpose, a person decides to store it away. I decide to store it away. So the Gemara says, "Bein min amuchon, bein shalom min amuchon." Whether I store it in a way that allows it to be prepared for use, we'll define these terms in just a moment, or whether I store it in a way in which it's unprepared for use, tamei, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer holds that the beged is tamei no matter what. The Rabbos say, what does that mean for us if the beged is tamei? What that means is it retains its identity as a beged. That according to Rabbi Eliezer, whatever is going to happen over here, it retains its identity as a beged. Okay, Rabbi Yeshua says, "Bein min amuchon, bein shalom min amuchon, tahor." Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, holds that whether you store it in a way that allows it to be prepared for use or unprepared for use, it's tahor. Rabbi Akiva says, "Well, we'll explain each of these shittos." Rabbi Akiva says, "Min amuchon tamei, shalom min amuchon tahor." Rabbi Akiva says, "Whether you if you store it away in a way that allows it to be prepared for use, it's tamei, i.e., it's called the baguette. But shalom min amuchon, if you store it in a way that is unprepared for use, it's tahor. It loses its identity as a baguette." Va'amar ulo v'itim Rabbi Barachan Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hakol modim zarku ba'ashpa divrei hakol tahor. Here's what everybody agrees with. If after using the baguette for the unimportant purpose, you threw it in the ashba, you threw it in the garbage, everyone agrees that what? It's tar, which means what? It's no longer a baguette. Hinichu bekufsa, on the other hand, after going ahead and using it for an unimportant purpose, if you put it away in a kufsa, in a box, divriakol tame. Everybody agrees. So we'll say, so understand what's happening over here. You have a baguette that has less than the normal requisite dimensions. You use the baguette for an unimportant purpose, which means now the piece of fabric loses its identity as a baguette. But now you store it away for later use. You store it away for later use. So now storing it away in and of itself may endow the baguette with a chashibus. Why else are you saving it? That's why the Gemara says if you throw it in the ash, throw it in the garbage, it's clearly not going to use it again. The halacha says it loses the chashibus. If you put it away in a box, it's clear that you're storing it for later use. You've once again endowed it with beged chashibus. So lo nechlaku, where does the machlokes come up? Elo shetelo b'magot, o shenicho la'achore hadalas. Where does the machlokes come up? If you go ahead and you hang the baguette on a peg, or you put it opposite behind the door. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Sover, Rabbi Eliezer says like this. Midalo zarku ba'ashpa daite iluye. So Rabbi Eliezer has a very simple shita. Rabbi Eliezer says, if you didn't want the baguette, what would you do with it? You throw it in the garbage. the fact that you did not throw it in the garbage, whether you're going ahead and hanging it on a peg, or whether you're putting it behind the door, halacha lemaisa, that is indicative of the fact that what? That you have das to hold onto that, and therefore, because you have das to hold onto it, even though it was just used for an unimportant purpose, which made it lose its identity as a beged, the fact that you've clearly demonstrated that you want to hold onto it re-endows it with beged identity, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer is the one who holds that halacha lemaisa, it's tameh. It's tameh, which when we say tameh, it doesn't really mean tameh, it means that it's a beged that's capable of receiving tumah. So the Gemara says,
if you save it as a rag,
yeah, in all these cases, presumably you're saving it as a rag. Yeah, but the point is you're saving it, and therefore halacha lemaisa it has its chashivos. So the Gemara says, we've got to go weiter. The Gemara says, Umay kari le shalom min amuchan. So why do we call it shalom min amuchan? Right? So that if that's the case, why does Rabbi Eliezer, remember, Rabbi Eliezer says that whether it's min amuchan or shalom min amuchan, whether it's put away in a way that's prepared for use or unprepared for use, it's tamei. So the Gemara says, "Umay kari le shalom min amuchan, delegabe kufsa lav muchan hu." So Rabbi Eliezer will say, because there are different ways of storing it, and ein achinami muchan means you're putting it in the kufsa, you're putting it in the box. That's clearly you're making a demonstrative statement that you're saving this for later. If you hang it on the door, you hang it on the peg, you put it behind the door. That's shalom in amuchan. Why is it shalom? What does it mean it's unprepared for use? Because when you compare that form of storage to storage in a box, that's an inferior form of storage. Rabbi Eliezer says at the end of the day, halacha lemaisa, storage is storage is storage, whether it's muchan or shalom in amuchan, and therefore it shows that you want to hold on to the bag, and therefore the bag is tamei. Rabbi Yeshua holds, midalo henichu bekufsa betule batle. Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, holds that no, if you did not put it in a box, that by death meaning if you did not store it in a chashiv fashion, that clearly shows that you've given up any intent of using the particular baguette. Umay kari le muchan, delegabe ashba muchanhu. So why does it call, according to this approach, right? So according to, why does it call it muchan? Because compared to an ashpa, it's muchanhu. So remember, Rabbi Yeshua was the one who held that halacha lemaisa, bein min amuchan, bein shalom min amuchan, bein shalom min amuchan, tahor. That according to Rabbi Yeshua, anything that's not a kufsa, is by definition shalom in is not going to go ahead and re-endow the item with beged status. So unless you're putting it in a kufsa, Rabbi Yeshua says, it's clear that you've given up any hope of using this particular beged, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua paskins, it's tahor. Again, remember, tahor means what? That it's no longer called a beged. So the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Akiva, says like this, Tlo'u b'magud, Sover Rabbi Eliezer, Be'enicho achori hadeles, Sover like Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Akiva is somewhat of a hybrid shita. And Rabbi Akiva holds that like this, if you hang it on a peg, Rabbi Akiva holds the peg, he holds like Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer hold by the peg? Rabbi Eliezer holds that it's a good form of storing, right? It's a good form of storing, and therefore in the case of the peg, Rabbi Akiva would call that muchan, and therefore halacha lemaisa, the beged would still be called the beged. Be'enicho achori hadeles, but if you just throw it behind the door, sover like Rabbi Yeshua. He holds like Rabbi Yeshua in that case, and therefore halacha lemaisa would say that that's not called min amuchan, and therefore halacha lemaisa would say that it's no longer a beged. V'hadir be Rabbi Akiva legabe Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Akiva ultimately changes his tune and paskins like Rabbi Yeshua. Now, Rabbi say, what does that mean? So, Rabbi say, so now, what the Gemara is suggesting is, this is the fundamental, why are we doing all of this? Right? Why are we doing all of this? Because the Gemara now is suggesting that this is the fundamental dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. That what are they arguing about? So, remember, we've had a number of different variations so far about what they're talking about. So, we had an approach that they're talking about that whether or not you could use uncharred wicks. That was one approach. Second approach is that halacha lemaisa, maybe they're arguing in terms of shivrei kelim, right? When you go ahead and you have gimel, less than gimel al gimel, erev yom tov shechal b'shabbos, yom tov shechal b'erev shabbos, are they arguing maybe when you burn the wick it becomes shivrei kelim? They're arguing about the shita of Rabbi Huda. Now the Gemara suggests, no, you know what they're arguing about? They're arguing much simpler. They're arguing specifically about a piece of fabric, the psila sabeged, is a piece of fabric that was less than gimel al gimel. And what's the fundamental question? You've now gone ahead and used it for, well, let's, I don't have to say it outside, let's say it inside. So the Gemara says the following, v'hadavei Rabbi Kiva d'gavei Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Kiva himself retracts and paskins like Rabbi Yoshua. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, amarava, midiktani psila sabeged. My iria detani psila sabeged, lisni psila shelbeged. So the Gemara says the following. The Rava makes a very interesting observation. The Mishnah says, psilas habeged. Now, psilas habeged literally means what? A psila, a wick, that comes from a beged. Why doesn't the Mishnah just say, psila shel beged? So, psila, now it sounds, you'll see yourself, what's the difference? It's a very big difference. Because psila shel beged just simply means what? That halacha lemaisa, it's a piece of fabric. It's a piece of fabric. Psilas habeged indicates that it is a wick that has come from an actual beged itself. My psilas habeged, what is any psilas habeged? Da adayin begedu. That ultimately it still has the status of a beged. So the Gemara is suggesting that Rabbi says that is the fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah. That if we're dealing with a situation over here of a piece of fabric that's less than gimel al gimel, that has now what? That has been used for a non-important use, therefore relegated to non-beged status, and a person stores it away for later use. The fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua will be, what is the status of that particular beged? What does Rabbi Eliezer say? Rabbi Eliezer says, Tzmeyahi. Now, because Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that what? Once you store it away, Ben min amuchan, Ben shalom min amuchan. Whether you stored it away that has to be prepared for use or unprepared for use, Rabbi Eliezer holds what? That Allah Chalamaisa, the fact that you stored it away indicates that it's important, which re-endows with beged status. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, says the Gemara, comes full, so even though Rabbi Kiva in the Braisa over here, on the bottom of Chaf Tesamad Aleph, highlights the idea that Rabbi Akiva makes a chilik between Muchan or Shalom and Amuchan. At the end of the day, the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva comes to agree with Rabbi Yoshua that Bein Min Amuchan, Bein Shalom Min Amuchan is Tahor, meaning once you've relegated it or once you've used it in a non-chashuv fashion, then by definition, it loses its beged status and therefore it's tahor. Therefore, the Gemara suggests halacha lemaisa, that is what they're arguing in the Mishnah. Okay, so we'll say bottom line is we have three different versions of the machlokes: Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. Lo yikov adam shofar shabeitza v'imalena shemen v'yitnen al pianer. A person cannot go ahead and literally perforate an eggshell, fill it with oil, and allow it to drip into the candle. So also, if you can imagine for a moment, so you have a perforated eggshell that you go out and you fill with oil, and it drips into the reservoir that is holding the wick, and the wick burns like that throughout Shabbos. You can't do that. Bishul shetehim min atefes, in order that it should drip throughout Shabbos. Va'afilu hishal cheres, and even if, now when you say eggshell doesn't even have to really be eggshell. Eggshell means any receptacle that's holding the oil over the reservoir where the wick is. You can't have that dripping into it on Shabbos. We'll discuss why that is. The Gemara says, well, let's just look at Rashi just a moment. Shetehe min atavis, Rashi says, V'yiskayim haner, shetehe ha-shemen mitavtev kol shalosoch haner, v'tayma mishum gzera shemi yistape kimenu, v'keva shekaseh l'ner, chayi mishum mechada. So we'll say, interestingly enough, Rashi explains, what's the concern? The concern is that over Shabbos you may come to take from the olive oil in the perforated eggshell. And the idea is that once oil has been set aside for kindling, any removal of that oil is tantamount to kibui, is tantamount to extinguishing the flame. Therefore, Chazal were concerned that since the oil is in its own self-contained thing, you may come to take from it and use from your own use, which would be a result of kibui, of extinguishing a flame on Shabbos. The chap over here that the Mishnah says is even if it's shalcheres, even if it's of earthenware. Now, the chiddush of that is, the assumption is that once you put oil in an earthenware receptacle, it really becomes kind of disgusting, and you're not going to come to go ahead and use it. Nevertheless, Chazal said you still can't do it out of a fear that one may come to remove some of the oil and therefore result in kibui extinguishing the flame. Now I want to just point out, when you remove some of the oil, you would not actually be extinguishing the flame at all. The flame would still go on. But in essence, what you're doing is you are causing the flame to remain lit for less time. So removing some of this fuel from the fuel source in and of itself is a partial kibui, is a partial extinguishing. So he goes on. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter. Aval im chibra hayotzer mitchila mutter. But if let's say the craftsman went ahead and forged together, connected this perforated eggshell, right, to the actual lantern, to the actual candle, the nair, where the wick is, then it's mutter. Or in other words, what he's saying over here is, if you make it into one kli, if you make it into one piece, then that would be permitted. Vivnei shu kli echad. Lo yimali adam kara shel shemen, v'yitnena b'tzad haner. A person may not go ahead and fill up a kara, fill up a bowl with oil, and put it by the nair. And also, whenever we speak about nair, we're talking about, again, this kli, this utensil, in which the wick is. So in this particular case, what you would have is you'd have a bowl of oil, right next to the nair, right next to the receptacle that's holding the wick. The top of the wick would be in the nair, but the bottom of the wick would be in the bowl of oil. So the wick is drawing out the oil from the bowl, but the flame itself is actually burning in the nair. So the Mishnah says, Lo yimali adam kara shel shemen. You may not go ahead and fill up a bowl with oil. V'yitnena b'tzad haner, and put it on the side of the receptacle that's holding the wick, the nair. V'yitein roshav psila b'socha b'shil shetehei sho'eves. And we'll call it the bottom of the wick into the bowl of oil to draw out the oil. You can't do that. Rabbi Huda says it's mutter. Rabbi Huda says it's mutter. Again, we'll see why. Says the Gemara. Utzricha. We need both of these cases. Rabbosai, essentially, they're really one and the same, right? Both keys are really saying the same thing. Because what's the common denominator? In both cases, you have a situation where you have a receptacle with oil that is separate and distinct from the receptacle that houses the wick and that is actually burning. And the general fear of Chazal is, if you have a separate receptacle with oil, then over the course of Shabbos, you may come to take out some of that oil, and thereby diminish the fuel source of the flame, which midrash banan only rabbinically is mechabes kibui, is extinguishing. Midrash oraisa is not mechabes, not extinguishing, because midrash oraisa, the only time you violate mechabes is when if you actually extinguish a flame. Over here, you're just removing some of the fuel, but nevertheless, midrash banan, you can't do it. So the Gemara says, utzricha, we need both of these cases. Why? Di'i ashmo inan shvo feres shal beitza, because if it would have just told me the case of Shofer Shavetza, if it would have just said the case of the perforated eggshell, Bahakami Rabbanan, the Chevan de Loma Isa Asil Istapuke Mine. So I might have said that the case of the perforated eggshell, you know why it's problematic? Because since the oil does not become disgusting when it's in the perforated eggshell, there's a real concern that a person may come to draw out some of the oil over the course of Shabbos. Aval shel cheres, but in an earthenware vessel, the ma'isa, that becomes disgusting. You put the oil in. Ema odu le Rabbi Yehuda. I might have said that the rabbis agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it's permitted to go ahead and do it on Shabbos. Excuse me. It's permitted to go ahead and set this up before Shabbos. V'yash v'inu shel cheres, and if it would have just told me the case of an earthenware utensil, b'hak ha'am Rabbi Yehuda, that's the case in which Rabbi Yehuda held his mutter. Aval behahi ema modi lehu le Rabbanon. But in the other case where the item is not, let's say, the perforated eggshell, which is not an earthenware utensil, where the oil does not become disgusting, maybe they would agree with the Rabbanon that it's usur. V'yash v'inan hanach tarti. And if it would have just said the first two cases, Bahani ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda mishum de lo mifsak, right? I might have said in those two cases, the reason Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's mutter is because de lo mifsak, there's no hefsek, there's no interruption. And Rabbi said, what does that mean? In the first two cases of the perforated eggshell or the perforated earthenware utensil. So those two cases, Rashi points this out, the way they're set up is they are suspended directly over the nair, directly over the receptacle that holds the wick. They're not, meaning when you look at them, they're close together. The case of the ka'ara, however, is what? Are clearly two distinct entities. You have a bowl with oil that's sitting next to, with some degree of space, next to the receptacle that houses the wick. So I might have said, when does Rabbi Huda permit this type of setup? That's only in the first two cases, where the perforated receptacle that holds the oil is right next to or right on top of what we call the nair. Aval ka'ara demifsika. But in the case of the bowl with oil, where there is a space in between the bowl and the receptacle that holds the wick. Ema modil hu the rabbanon. I might have thought that he agrees with the rabbanon that it should be aser. V'yashmainan ba'hi kami rabbanon. Ava v'hani tarti ema modil Rabbi Yehuda. And if it would have just said the case of the bowl with the oil, I might have said that's the case where the rabbi said you can't do it. But in the two cases of the perforated receptacles, it should be permitted to do it. Rabbi said kamash monon that we need all three cases to indicate to us that in all three cases the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan applies. So Rabbi says, what comes out over here is the fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is whether or not we are concerned that when you have a separate receptacle with oil, where the rabbi is concerned that you may come to draw out some of that oil on Shabbos. The Rabbanan say yes, Rabbi Yehuda says no. Therefore, in all of these cases where you have an independent oil receptacle, the Rabbanan say you may not use it out of fear that you may come to take out some of the oil. Rabbi Yehuda says you can. Let's do one more line. Yotz im tana im chibra b'sid b'charoses mutar v'ha'anan tnan. So the Gemara says that the Mishnah said that if you went ahead and chibra b'sid b'charos is mutter. So interestingly enough, the Braisa says that when you have these independent receptacles, if you attach it to the ner, right, the receptacle that houses the wick, with sid or b'charos is, with some type of plaster, meaning if you make them into one utensil, it's okay, then it's mutter. V'ha'anan t'nan. Yotzer, v'hanan yotzer tanan. But the Mishnah says, interestingly enough, the wording of the Mishnah is im chibra ha-yotzer mitchila, right? If the craftsman went ahead and attached them together, which indicates what? Which would seem to indicate that the only time it becomes a real utensil is not if you do your own little, you know,
jerry rig.
Okay, whatever. You do your own little, you know, garage concoction over here. Sounds like it has to be a yotzer. To which the Gemara says, no, my yotzer ke'en yotzer. No, what it means is you just have to do a craftsman-like job. That just like if the craftsman were to put it together, these items would be permanently attached. So to Aloch Lamaisa, if you in your own way, even if it's not very professional, but you go ahead and construct it in a way that attaches these two kalin, then Aloch Lamaisa, they become one kli, and even the Rabbanon would agree that such a setup would be mutter. All right, we'll stop over here.